All right. Hi, I'm Jonah Miller, as said. And in numerical relativity, a typical problem looks something like this. My movie will play. So this is two black holes merging. And the depth here shows the curvature of space-time. And this thing at the bottom here is the gravitational waveform people might want to extract. And there's going to be a keynote talk on this. I think there's going to be a keynote talk on this later, so look forward to that. And this was, the simulation was done by the Cornell group, and the keynote speaker is from there, so maybe he can give you some information. And so, but we work on the Einstein Toolkit, which is, well, there's Einstein, and it's a toolbox for doing relativistic astrophysics, much like that simulation. And it has over 100 registered users, and most of them are also contributors. It's a real community effort. And it's also an international community. There's over 50 research groups from around the world that are participating and where these users come from. And I want to emphasize that it's registered users. There's a lot more people who download the toolkit and use it but never register. And it's been cited in well over 100 publications, so there's a lot of successful simulations that have come out of this toolbox. And it's been very successful, and it uses an algorithm for differentiation that's finite differences. But supercomputers are changing. So this is, I'm from Colorado, so this is a Colorado supercomputer, Janus. And you know, each of these shelves on one of these boxes is a compute node. So we're getting much, much more parallel. And that means we need new algorithms to figure out how to do things efficiently that can handle the parallelization. So one of those algorithms, which has been very successful in fluid dynamics, and we're trying to port to our toolkit, is discontinuous Galerkin methods. And if you have a computational domain on which you have a function that you want to solve for, let's focus down on one subdomain or an element. And on it lives a piece of our function, which you could represent either as a polynomial interpolation between colocation points, or you could represent it spectrally. And it evolves. You take derivatives within that element. And you have neighbor elements on which there's neighbor pieces of the function. And the thing is that they each evolve independently. And at the boundaries, they're double valued. The function is double valued between here and here. And this means that we have to impose some sort of penalty terms to force a global solution, to be able to extract a global solution. And I'll talk about that in a minute. And then you have elements that fill your entire computational domain. So what do I mean by penalty terms? This is a solution of just a scalar wave equation using discontinuous Galerkin methods. And you can see the elements very clearly. They're these first order bars here. This is only a first order solution. And you can see that it's discontinuous between the boundaries of the elements. And this is because we chose a bad penalty term, where what we did is we just added to the right-hand side of our equation a term that tried to take the difference between the boundaries to zero. It's just this side of the boundary, the penalty was a distance from the average. But if you take in the flow of information into account, and you let it evolve over time, those boundaries evolve towards each other. And at the end, you get something that approximates a continuous solution. So that's what we mean by penalty terms. So why is discontinuous Galerkin better than, say, finite differences? I'll give you a brief description of that by comparing the two. So here's, say we have a grid of points, three on one processor, three on another processor, and we want to evolve this function. And to do that, we have to figure out taking spatial derivatives. So in finite difference, if you have a second order approximation, you might want to find the derivative at this blue grid point, and you do that by evaluating the function here and here and taking the difference between the two and dividing by the difference by the lattice spacing. And the problem is that information needs to come from this processor to this processor so that you know about what this is on this processor when you take the derivative. And it's OK for a first order scheme. One processor only needs to talk to its neighbor, or sorry, a second order scheme. But if you get a third order or a fourth order or higher, things get bad. Because every order you go up, you have to add another, you have to take more information from the neighboring processor. And this can get quickly very bad if you want to have a lot of processors. Information transfer latency can become a huge problem. So it's compared to discontinuous Galerkin methods, where one element lives on each processor. and here's the element boundaries. And for the second order scheme, things are roughly the same. This blue data point, it needs one piece of information from its side, and it needs one piece of information from the neighboring processor. But if you go to higher order, this, if you evaluate here, most of the higher order differentiation happens inside the element. You only care about the penalty term. So the only piece of information that comes across from the neighboring processor is the piece of information you need for the penalty term, which is one piece of information. So for transferring across processors, it's as if you're a low-order finite differences scheme, but you get the advantage of having higher-order derivatives within an element. So that scales much, much nicer. So I'm now going to talk about some tests we do and why. I'm showing you the simulation again. It's a physical system, and it's described by 10 highly nonlinear equations. I'm pointing to the depth of this plot because that depth is the curvature of space-time is a second-order differential equation, and you know these curves are very, very curvy, highly nonlinear. And at the end, you have a measurable quantity extract, and there's a lot that can go wrong, as you might expect, in your code. And so the community has developed a bunch of tests to ensure that nothing is going wrong, called the apples with apples tests. And this isn't unusual. Most communities have something like this. So one of the most important tests, and the most basic tests, is called the robustability test, where you evolve nothing, but you add a little bit of noise. So at each time step, you inject noise into the system to basically simulate the numerical roundoff error you'd get, but a lot worse. And so you evolve it until it crashes. It's like driving a truck over bigger and bigger trucks over a bridge until they break. And this is plotting the error as a function of time. And what you want for your code is you want the error to grow no greater than polynomial in time. And you want higher resolutions to have less error. Because the higher the resolution, in theory, the closer you are to the true physical solution. And if your error goes up as you get closer to the physical solution, you're clearly doing something very wrong. So this is our solution for discontinuous Gorkin methods that we've implemented, not optimized yet. But as you increase resolution, the error gets lower. And the worst error is linear in time. So that's great. Next test I want to motivate by saying that this, in numerical relativity, variables or the coordinates that you're evolving on are actually dynamical variables in your evolution. So this is a plot of a gravitational lensing of a galaxy cluster. And you can almost viscerally see the warping of space-time. And this plot that's promotional by Gravity Probe B is showing that around the Earth, for example, the coordinates we use to describe general relativity and gravity, they're actually being warped by the rotation of the Earth. This is called frame dragging. It's actually a measurable effect. And sometimes this is a measurable physical thing that relates to what gravity is. And sometimes it's just a funny coordinate system, like polar coordinates on the plane. So we have to be, our code has to be able to handle this. And what we do to solve that is, or test that, is again, we evolve nothing, but this time in funny coordinates. So what we do is we take empty space, and we evolve it by changing the coordinate system periodically in time. You might go from Cartesian to polar to some crazy Maxwell system, and then back to Cartesian. We don't actually do that. We evolve something like a wave equation for our coordinate system. But the point I want to make is that it's just coordinates. We're not actually adding any physics here. So at the end of the day, we better get empty space out. Otherwise, something's going wrong. And so this is a plot from discontinuous Gorkin of, well, this is a quantity constructed from the derivatives of the Jacobian matrix of the coordinate transformation on the y-axis. And on the x-axis, it's just the x-coordinate in space. And there's two resolutions and the theoretical value you should get from calculating by hand what that transformation is. And the lines and the curves line up exactly perfectly. So that's very nice. And you can actually zoom in and examine convergence order and that sort of thing. I don't really have time to go into that, but I'll show you that plot. And you can ask me afterwards if you want. So the last test I wanted to discuss is a static black hole. And if you think about in astrophysical black holes, they're very bright, crazy things. There's inflowing matter, which is glowing like nuts. Jets of energy might be shooting out the poles. Lots of stuff is happening. This is what we think of when we think of astrophysical black holes. But in a vacuum relativity simulation, it's actually something more like this. This is a Flam paraboloid that's showing the distance between grid points as a function of radius. And what we're actually evolving is at every point in space, we're evolving a 4x4 matrix, which is the Jacobian of the coordinate transformation. And that's really where things like mass and event horizon radius, that's where that's encoded. So a big test of whether or not your code is working is you evolve a whole field of 4x4 matrices, and you hope that at the end, when you integrate it and try and extract physical quantities, they're correct. So they, and if your code is working, they'd better be. So that's what this plot is showing. This is showing the black hole mass evolved with discontinuous Galerkin methods as a function of time. And at first, so here's the green is exactly what you the exact mass you should get. Blue is the measured one. And at first, it looks really bad. But then you look at the y-axis, and you see that each of these notches is only one part is only 2 parts in 10 to the 4. So the total variation is only about 1 part in 10 to the 3 over a long period of time and many, many evolution steps. So this is sort of a test that things are working right. The next steps are we need to port better singularity handling into our method. We have finite differences. Handling finite differences, our old version, we have singularity handled very well, but now we need to port that into discontinuous Galerkin. We need to add fluid dynamics. That's a big step. Then we, once we do that and optimize our code and test things like weak scaling and strong scaling, then we can really do some relativistic astrophysics with much better scaling behavior. Thanks.
Any questions for the speaker? So
yeah.
Could you expand a bit on singularity
handling? Sure. So there's what we're doing now for the black hole, which has a singularity, is we're essentially just taking out the part where the singularity is. It's not in our grid. But what people have done in the past, like one possibility is, well, some people have chosen coordinate systems where the singularity, you just never reach it. So again, I explained that we use very crazy coordinate systems in numerical relativity. So one option is to choose a coordinate system where the singularity is essentially at coordinate infinity. That probably won't work for discontinuous Galerkin methods, so we need to come up with it's not clear exactly what we're going to do yet to come up with a scheme that will allow us to handle, say, moving black holes, for example.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is this guy debugging your code? What is
that's us implementing our code, I guess.
Any other questions?
Just one. You mentioned that the penalization function thingy exchanges one piece of information.
Yes.
Does that mean it's necessarily only like a continuity? And it's a no condition on the differentiability?
So we don't impose that our equations are differentiable. I guess the statement would be in the limit of a large number of elements and in the limit of enough time steps, you expect your solution to converge to a continuous global solution. But it's at any time step, it's certainly not.
Maybe one last question.
So you mentioned that you're bringing something in from computational fluid dynamics, so discontinuous Galerkin method.
Yeah.
Why did the CFD people come up with it or take up with it? Why do they use it under what conditions?
Why do they use it? I don't know a whole lot about computational fluid dynamics, but my understanding is that discontinuous Galerkin methods have sort of two big advantages. One is that they're able to handle crazy geometries much better. So if you're trying to study the fluid of an airplane wing, for example, this sort of combines the flexibility of a finite elements method, where you can choose weirdly shaped elements and put them together, with the locality of a finite differences method. So that's one advantage. And the other is that it's more able to handle things like shocks. That's my understanding.
OK, so thank you again.
Thanks.